Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I don't know about you, but one thing that I really like and appreciate about podcasts are that I can listen to them whenever I'm doing, you know, other things. I'll listen to one when I'm cleaning my house, walking my dogs, cooking dinner, or just getting ready in the morning. And I know that now there are thousands of podcasts out there, which I think is amazing. And there's so many different topics and personalities out there that I think there's really something out there for everyone, which is why I truly appreciate all of you for listening. And it's also why I take the time to really think about the topics and guests that I have on here, because I try to imagine myself when I decide which podcast or episode I want to listen to. And I really try to imagine what would be most beneficial and hopefully engaging and of interest to you, which is why, as I've said it on here before, I truly want to hear from you. I created this podcast for all of you who are listening. I created it in the hopes that I could help spread awareness and information about eating disorders and body image issues, and also in the hopes that, you know, if you're out there struggling, that you won't feel alone, hopeless, and hey, maybe even seek help and recover. Now, that being said, I do have a guest on here that I connected with through social media because her post really caught my eye. There are a lot of posts out there, I know. There's so many that it can be difficult to sift through the ones that are giving messages that I know, unfortunately, on the surface, they really do seem to promote something positive, but ultimately they still perpetuate a lot of the toxic diet culture messaging that really only serve to hurt everybody. But the guest today, she's the real deal. Her content is anything but toxic, and she's here with us today to really get into a great conversation with me. So if you're someone who's confused about food, exercise, and all that messaging, and you know what, especially if you're someone who was or is a former athlete, then I want you to sit back, relax, and really enjoy listening to what we have to talk about today. Lara Days is a certified intuitive eating counselor, yoga instructor, and board certified health and wellness coach who is on a mission to dismantle the diet industry and empower people to live their happiest, healthiest, most confident lives. She focuses on helping you improve your mindset, unlearn your past conditioning, and trust your body so that you can find food freedom, ditch diet culture, and step into your power. The work we do just won't change your relationship with your body. It will change the way you show up in every aspect of your life. Lara, welcome to the show. Excited to have you here.
Excited to be here.
All right. So, I know I said some things about you, but it's a short blib. So I'm wondering if you would share a little bit with us about how you got into this spot in your life and a little bit more about you, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a long and winding road, as they say, to get to where I am. But ultimately, my path to doing the work that I now do, I think, stemmed partly from my background as a singer and having to use my voice and my body as my instrument, mm-hmm. and also as an athlete who, once I stopped playing organized sports, realized that I made it all the way through college as a college athlete with really no idea how to work out on my own and knowing nothing about food and nutrition and feeling like that was kind of unacceptable and starting to basically use myself and my body as an experiment. I tried different ways of eating. I tried different ways of moving and ultimately ended up in this place where I am now of doing all of those things very intuitively after trying all of the ways of letting other people tell me how to move and what to eat and figuring out that my body actually knows best. So now that's essentially what I help other people do who are tired of following all the diets or tracking all the macros or, you know, trying to be perfect and following their meal plan and workouts and all of the things as I help them get rid of all the stress that accompanies that and figure out how to actually trust their own body to tell them what it needs.
You know, I love hearing this because I hear so often people saying, oh, I got to count my macros. I got to this, I got to that. And I see the stress and struggle they're under, right? And, you know, just someone who's, you know, I shared with the audience before, someone who, you know, followed every diet on the planet, you know, I've probably tried them all, and got off that crazy train, just to see, you know, how their life is so structured and so limited. And, you know, they obviously can't eat all the things when they're out, and that looks awful. But I'm wondering, how do you have that conversation with people about how, you know, that's actually not the path to stay on? And when people truly, they believe that this is quote unquote healthy, this is the right way to do things, this is going to get them the results that they want in terms of training or the way their body is going to look. Like, how do you have that conversation with people?
Well, so one of the hardest things for me is that I think someone who's in that place that you just described, I don't know if they're ready for the conversation, to be perfectly honest. I think that, you know, most of the people who come to me are people who are so tired that they're like, okay, there has to be another way. Mm-hmm. And I'm now open to receiving what another way might be. And I say this partly from my own, I guess, how do I say this? Like, I want to say it stems from just like this want to help people, but I've gotten myself into a lot of those conversations, trying to convince people to see the light, so to speak. And like, they just aren't ready. And it ends up being a fruitless conversation. We both leave frustrated. Mm-hmm. And also rewinding to where I was, I guess at this point, it was probably, oh, wow, it's been a long time now. Almost a decade ago, but I was just like on this high horse thinking that counting macros and skipping social events to work out was discipline and willpower, and that I was just better than other people. And if someone had tried to have this conversation with me at that point in my journey, I would have been like, fuck you, dude. You don't know me. You don't know what you're talking about. Like, I'm doing what's best for me. And I believed that. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that like it was all bad. I learned a lot of really important things from counting macros and finding this level of discipline that I didn't know that I had, but ultimately it just wasn't sustainable. And it wasn't how I wanted to like live my whole life, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had to get to that point of realizing that before I was ready to jump off of that train, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So people listening might be like, what did you learn that was so valuable? I'm just wondering.
Yeah. I mean, so I mentioned that I was an athlete and I didn't really know anything about food. Right. And so let me also just give the precursor that if we don't have a healed relationship with food, body, and movement, I think the tracking apps need to just stay away. Like, oh, yes. I just want to be very clear about that. Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about the positives, like, I think about fiber intake, which for a lot of people is pretty low. A lot of foods that we think have a ton of fiber just like don't. And you don't really necessarily know unless you see, okay, I'm typing all my food in for the day and I feel like I'm eating all this fiber and I've had 15 grams and I need to have closer to 25. Like, that's valuable for me to know, and being able to see what foods do have fiber. Oh, avocado actually has way more than I ever would have thought. Mm-hmm. Chia seeds have way less fiber than I would have thought. Understanding, you know, and this honestly, I think is rooted less in tracking food and more in just the lack of education that we have around food growing up. We aren't taught much. I was taught the food pyramid, which is like no longer a thing that's being taught, I don't think.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think. But when we don't understand what foods have protein and we know that we need to be eating protein, like, how do we know? Well, I learned from typing it into an app. And again, like, those are, I try to stay away from deciding or categorizing is a better word, categorizing behaviors as good or bad, because it really comes down to the intention behind them. Mm-hmm. If we are using these as a way to obsessively micromanage our bodies, like that's not healthy. Mm-hmm. If we're using them in a way where, you know, another thing I think about is folks who, my mom has a lot of gallbladder issues, so she has to be really careful about how much fat she eats in one sitting. And she is in a place now where she doesn't, like, she trusts her body to tell her, but she wasn't always in that place. And so for her, paying more attention to like, how much fat is in this? Do I need to look at the label? Do I need to type it into an app so that I can figure out what my body's threshold is so that I'm not eating in a way that's unsafe for my unique body? Like, that's really valuable. Again, that doesn't mean that it's sustainable and that we should be doing that for our whole entire lives. The same way that, I don't like comparing this to money, but like people, one of the arguments that I hear people say a lot around tracking calories and macros is like, well, if we track our money, shouldn't we track our food intake? And like, there's a lot more nuance when you're talking about individual bodies, first of all. But second of all, I think too, like, yeah, we could have a financial advisor. We still don't need to track every single penny that goes in and out of every single account. Like, we need to make sure that we have enough money to pay our bills, obviously. We mm-hmm. want to save for retirement, obviously. But again, there's a difference between being aware and having the knowledge and micromanaging and stressing about that. And that's where we don't need any of the tracking and the apps and the meal plans and the, like, we don't need any of that to live a happy, healthy life. And I think we've been brainwashed to think that we do have to have all of that.
Right. And something important I heard you say though, too, is like with your mom with the gallbladder, that was for something that shifted in her body. She had her gallbladder taken out, or maybe she had gallbladder disease. And so it was something about a medical condition she had or something physiological with her body. She was just trying to figure out like, okay, I had this shift and change in my body that was new. I'm just trying to figure this out. It wasn't about like with eating disordered stuff, like I'm doing this because I'm trying to lose weight.
Exactly. Which is with intent is so important. And this is where, again, like nuance is required, right? Let me also say my relationship with food has never been concerning, I will say. My relationship with movement was more concerning. And this is where we can use an example of intent, right? And that is that working out is not inherently a bad thing. In fact, most people, myself included, would say that working out is a great thing. We need to move our bodies in order to have a healthy body and mind. However, when we are skipping social events to go to the gym, or we're going to do 3 workouts in a day because we were sick for 2 days and we feel like we have to make up for it, like that's what I was doing. And that is not healthy. So the act of working out is a neutral activity. But why are we doing it? Are we trying to go burn X number of calories every day because we have a vacation coming up and we're going to wear a swimsuit and we fear what people will think about the way our body looks? Or are we working out because it's a part of our routine and we want to be a healthy human? Those are very different intentions.
Right. And two, like I call it negotiating with Ed. It's like, oh, I ate this. Now I've got to go burn it off. Or it allows people to earn their food or compensate, right? A lot of times people don't realize exercise is used as a purging technique, right? It's like, I ate this. Now I got to go burn it off. You know, it's like permission to eat food or compensate for the food they just ate to like reduce guilt or, you know, whatever it is. That's totally different. Like yeah. That's where the exercise is tied to the food, right?
Exactly. And I'm glad you said that because most people don't even realize that over-exercising is a purging behavior. And the whole idea of compensating for what we eat not only is not scientifically sound, I recently made some content about that because our exercise thermogenesis is like 5-10% of our daily energy burn anyway. So like scientifically, that concept doesn't even really track. And more importantly to this conversation, it is also a disordered eating behavior and is a sign that there is some healing work to be done when it comes to our relationship with food, movement, and our body.
Mm-hmm. So, like, getting back to, you know, the concept of, and I did this too. I would skip social events to go work out. And I'm wondering for you, did you get the validation from people? So it was kind of like this reinforcing thing, like, oh my gosh, you have so much willpower. I wish I could be as motivated as you. Like, did that happen for you as well?
Totally. Everyone was like, oh, I just wish I could be that disciplined. Mm-hmm. And it's like, honestly, I will say I would get annoyed because to me, I was like, but you can be. Like, that was where my head would go, is like, I don't have like superhuman powers or anything. I was not, no one came and like knighted me a workout god, you know, like we can all just go do the things. But yeah, like being praised for what was essentially a disordered behavior was happening all the time. And it happens to my clients all the time. They share that, you know, people were validating their eating disorders because they were losing weight. And everyone was like, oh my God, you're amazing. Like, what are you doing? You look so good. Tell me your secrets. And it's like, the secret is I have an eating disorder. Like, why are you asking me that? You know, but that happens all the time because we're so conditioned to think that more is better when the reality is that more is just more. And that if someone is in a smaller body, they like innately are more valuable, more disciplined, healthier, more beautiful, whatever society has made us believe.
Mm-hmm. Which is all BS, right?
Absolutely.
It's very hard to not believe. It's very hard because it's constantly perpetuated. And this is the things that people hear all the time. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually wondering, so if you work with, I'm assuming you work with people who are former athletes as well, their relationship with movement and exercise is different because that was something maybe that they were paid to do or sponsored to do or is a big part of their life. What are the things you're seeing come in? Like, do they have a disordered relationship with food and their exercise as well? Or the transition out of being an athlete into like, maybe they're transitioning to having a different career or something like that? Like, how do you work with them?
Yeah. Well, first I want to say, because this is something that comes up a lot, I consider an athlete to be anyone who played a sport at any level. So like, I haven't worked with any professional athletes at this point. Mm-hmm. I've worked with many, many people who played high school sports or college sports. And honestly, I think that from thinking through my client roster, the transition from college sports to reality, so to speak, is one of the hardest because we, and I experienced this too, is that level of like, I have been doing this thing for so long and I've had someone else telling me what to do for so long. And this sport or these sports have been my identity for so long that all of a sudden it's all gone. So you don't know how to work out on your own. You're not moving with a team. You aren't calling yourself a softball player or a basketball player or whatever it is anymore. Your body inevitably starts to change because you're not practicing for 12 hours a week anymore. And so there's just a lot of change that happens that I personally was not prepared for. And that most of my clients also were not prepared for. And so I think it's less of like, this one thing is the hardest, and more of, we have this perfect storm of all of these things changing all at once. And if we have not done the work, which like, if you're leaving college at 22, no one's really done this work, to release your identity from the things that you do and the people who you're around, that is really hard. Your body's always just kind of looked the same, right? And this is something I hear from my clients a lot, is they're like, well, you know, when I played high school volleyball, I was this size. And so I feel like when I'm active, I'm that size. And I'm like, but you were in high school and you were playing volleyball for 12 hours a week. Like, this is not, the expectation does not need to be the same.
That is, you know, how have people grappled with that, you know, because yes, the high school body and the adult body, right? They're two different things, but I think people do have that in their head, right? Like, oh, because I have, my body shifted and changed as I've gotten older, and they're equating it with, it's because I'm doing less activity. Like, if I just do more exercise, mm-hmm. I'll get back to that. But I don't know how often we just discuss like the normalization of our bodies changing over time.
Yeah.
Instead of equating it with like the eating disorder mind of like, oh, it's because I'm not exercising anymore.
Mm-hmm. And also just understanding, and this is has been really hard for my clients, and it is understanding that there may or may not even be a reason that our bodies are changing other than we are aging. Like, and that's not to say, like, there's a lot of research that age alone does not impact our metabolic rate until we're 60. But we've been so conditioned to think about our health as like purely physical and purely what we eat and how we move. And so all of a sudden we have a big loss in our family, or we change jobs, or we move across the country, and we don't understand that that can change our bodies. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I'm eating differently, I'm moving differently, or I had a baby. And like, those are the only reasons that my body is allowed to change. And it's like, no, like, that's not true. Our bodies change all the time, and they're allowed to change at any point. They are organic. We are growing, changing creatures. We are not sculptures.
Yeah, I love that you say that. Like, I think we need to discuss this, because I do think there's this control aspect of eating disorders too. Like, I feel out of control, my body's out of control, something shifted, changed, I've gone up or down a size, or I don't know what's going on. I need to go on a diet, I need to change something, I need to exercise more, I need to do something. Like, they blame themselves. What did I do wrong? What do I need to do? Oh, if I follow this new diet or this program, then I'm going to feel in control. I'm going to feel like I'm going to get a hold of this, right? Because that is the notion out there. Like, you need to have willpower. You need to do this. You need to do that. But those are the messages out there. It's your fault. You did something wrong. You're not doing something right. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And unfortunately, this is perpetuated by a lot of the fitness space is just, and I get it, because understanding all of the things that impact our metabolic function and our body size is complex. And I've even had other like professional health practitioners try to tell me that like thermodynamics does not apply to, like, the laws of thermodynamics don't apply to everyone. And I'm like, gravity applies to everyone. Like, there's no one that is immune to the laws of gravity. Same with thermodynamics. However, all of the things that impact thermodynamics are complex, and understanding how they all work is complex. And so, of course, we can't expect average Joes and Janes and whoever to be able to understand that. And so our brains, because they are meaning-making machines, have to grasp on to messages. Mm-hmm. And the messages that we've been taught are that if you're gaining weight, then you need to move more and eat less. And it's like, no, that's not what that means.
Okay. So get this all the time. People are like, come on, it's just basic math, doc. Like, it is calories in, calories out. It's just that simple. Like, of course, I need to, going back to what we said, calculate my macros, calculate my calories, follow the labels. And, you know, I have my own shtick about this, but since you're here,
yeah.
Like, can you talk to people about like why it's not just a basic math equation of like, just calculate your calories, calculate your macros, follow this plan, and then that just makes sense. Like, why is that just futile?
Totally. So we could probably do like a 3-part series just on this conversation, but to keep it short and sweet, we have to understand that our bodies are impacted by everything in our environment. So yes, of course, food and movement, but also trauma, also sleep, also medication, also injury, illness. And then we get into things like the thermic effect of food, which is the amount of energy that our bodies use or burn in order to digest the foods that we're eating. Different foods have different rates of basically the rate at which they're metabolized, right? And so eating broccoli, eating 100 calories of broccoli and eating 100 calories of tablespoons of sugar, let's say, those are going to digest very differently in the body because one has fiber and one does not. And so even though there are the same 100 calories going into our mouths, the amount of energy that our body actually uses digesting them and then gets to our body is not going to be the same. Same thing if you took 100 calories of peanut butter and 100 calories of chicken breast. Those are two different foods that metabolize differently in our bodies. And like when I talk about this concept of the calories in food outside of your body are not the same as inside of your body, people just turn into like the mind blown emoji, which when I first read about it, when I was studying nutrition, like same. And after counting macros for 5 years, I was like, oh my God, I'm an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, because we don't know, like, you're not an idiot. We don't know. I was not an idiot. I didn't know. But these are all, not all, these are some of the many things that impact the metabolic rate of our bodies. And something that I think about sometimes is I went on hormonal birth control a couple of times in college. That's a whole other story. But basically, the point that I want to make is my movement and my food did not change. And I gained 35 pounds. If we're just looking at calories in, calories out, nothing should have changed because I was eating the same. I was moving the same. Mm-hmm. Well, when your hormones change, your metabolism changes, mm-hmm. right? Like our hormones are the little messengers in our body that tell everything else in our body what to do. So like that's going to change a lot of things if our hormones change. Sleep impacts hormone production. What we eat impacts hormone production. Stress impacts hormone production. So simplifying the laws of thermodynamics down to just eat less and move more shows a huge lack of understanding of the complexities of metabolism and the human body.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Because I look at all these articles, they're constantly popping up on my stuff, right? My computer, my phone. It's like, if you just do these five things, you know, or these five exercises or these five foods. And I know people listening get these things too. I don't know if you do, but it's like, it cannot be this simple.
It's not.
No, but that's what bothers me. And that's why I'm bringing it up is it's so enticing. These like clickbait articles, right? It's like, I think they just grasp people, right? Because it seems like, oh, if I just do these five things, but then tomorrow it's these 10 things and tomorrow it's these. It's why are these things out there?
Because we're all confused and we don't have the information that we need. And so we grasp at whatever we think is going to help.
But that's why I'm bringing you on, right? Because so people are like, oh my gosh, so what do I do? They're going to be confused. And I get that all the time too. So now what do? I'm so confused.
We have to reconnect with our own body's innate intuition. And the good news for everyone is that when we were all born, we were born intuitive eaters. We cry when, if anyone has kids, their kids cry when they're hungry. They stop eating when they're full. They cry when they need anything, right? They go to the bathroom when they got to go to the bathroom. Like we were born intuitive and then the world fucked with our heads and we started telling our intuition to shut up because, well, I read this article that says I should do intermittent fasting. So I'm going to ignore my hunger cues. Or, well, my friend ate a bigger breakfast than I did and she's not hungry yet. So I can't be hungry yet. And we start to literally ignore our body's cues. And then we wonder why we don't understand what our body is telling us 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road.
Okay. And I know I've beaten this topic a little bit on here, but I always have to ask because people still I don't know what the problem is, but two things. Why is breakfast something that people like constantly are saying, I'm not hungry, I don't eat breakfast, and they constantly like, coffee is not breakfast.
Coffee is not breakfast. What's interesting is, well, first I want to say, like, anything that pertains to health, we have to take into account biodiversity. All of our bodies are different. There are some people who wake up and they don't want to eat in the mornings because it makes them feel queasy or whatever. Cool. I'm not telling you to force feed yourself to the point where you get sick. Like, that's not the point. Most people, if things are working as they should, will wake up hungry because we just fasted while we slept for 7, 8, 9 hours and probably a couple hours before bed. So call it, we haven't eaten for 10 hours, 11 hours. We should be hungry. Like, bodies need to eat more frequently than every 11 hours. If we're not getting enough sleep, our body does not produce enough leptin and ghrelin, which are our hunger and fullness hormones, and we won't feel our natural hunger cues. So getting enough sleep is super important. Mm-hmm. If we're not eating enough food, if we have been chronically dieting, if we have trauma, like, there are a lot of things that are going to be barriers to being able to feel our hunger cues. And something that I didn't realize until I started doing this work more recently is that a lot of people don't understand that there are hunger cues outside of, like, stomach hunger or growling stomach. So if their stomach wasn't growling, they were like, I'm not hungry. And I was like, well, what else is going on? Like, you told me that you have brain fog and that you feel dizzy and that you have a headache. Like, those are hunger cues. And they're like, oh my God, I never thought of that. Stomach hunger is not the only way that we can tell if we're hungry. If you're waking up with a headache, if you're feeling dizzy, if you are snippy, or, you know, there's a reason that hanger is a word, right? Like, if you're feeling snippy, if you're having trouble focusing, those are all signs that our body needs food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. I know. I always say, like, I think people, when they get to that point of starving, like, they think that's hungry, especially if they've been dieting a long time. They absolutely, I think they're in a constant state of starvation. Like, they just think that's hungry. That's beyond hungry.
Yeah, that's like famished.
Yeah.
Well beyond time to eat. A general rule is, like, we should be eating something every 4 to 5 hours, depending on your activity level, maybe even more. I usually eat every 3 to 4 because I get hungry every 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah, I do too. Like, every 3 hours, if I'm not eating, I get brain fog with me. You don't want to be my patient if, like, I haven't eaten in 3 hours.
Yeah. Or I'm like, why is everything in the world pissing me off right now? I'm like, oh, I haven't eaten in 4 hours. That's why.
So to the other point I was going to ask, this intermittent fasting, I constantly get people challenging me. They're like, but the research and these well-renowned doctors say it's the best thing for you. And, you know, it's healthy to, you know, fast like a couple times a month or at least once a week. And I'm okay.
Listen, if you want to skip meals and call it fasting and it makes you feel good, cool. I'm not going to tell. I am here for body autonomy. If that makes you feel great, you go for it. I have yet to see a research study done on human females to show us any benefits of intermittent fasting. Now, I have not admittedly looked for new research in the past probably 6 months or so. So maybe there is some now, but the last time I looked for this specific research, there was none to be found. There were studies on males and there were studies on animals. There were no human studies on females. And generally speaking, especially if we are of childbearing age, regardless of whether or not you want to have a child, our bodies exist to procreate, which means that they need to feel safe to grow a baby. And in order to feel safe to grow a baby, we got to have food and we got to have our hormones functioning at peak performance levels. And that all requires food. So the whole idea that intermittent fasting would be some magical cure for anything is, like, just really bizarre to me based on my understanding of, you know, how bodies work. I will also say that, unfortunately, there are questionable people in every profession, including the medical field. Mm-hmm. And if you go to like the Optavia website where people are eating 800 calories a day, they have a bunch of pictures of doctors with their faces up there. It says backed by these people because they're getting paid a fuck ton of money. That's it. Like, desperate people do desperate things. And if these people, these doctors had some sort of emergency, they needed money for something, and there was this diet that was like, hey, we're going to give you $1 million if we can put your face on this website. Cool. Thumbs up. I'm in. You know, like, just because something is backed by a medical professional does not mean that it's legitimate, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's another thing. And you and I were talking about this a little before, you know, we hit record, was it's confusing, right? Because a lot of times there's, you know, people on social media that say they're experts or say they're in this, you know, diet or whatever it is, pro body positivity, all this kind of stuff. And then when you look a little deeper, you really realize a lot of it's pro diet, pro, you know, you know, all the things that we're talking about that's toxic. So how can people, how do you help people kind of differentiate between like what's actually something that's beneficial for people and not toxic diet culture stuff versus not?
So our intuition is always right. Mm-hmm. That gets a little dicey because when we have a dysregulated nervous system, we can't necessarily feel our intuition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of chronic dieters or folks struggling with disordered eating or eating disorders have a dysregulated nervous system. So this is like a simple, but maybe not easy to say, like, you got to trust your gut. I am all for asking people for their credentials, especially if someone is calling themselves a health coach or like, I am a coach. I'm a board certified health and wellness coach. Unfortunately, because the coaching industry is not regulated yet the same way that other industries are, pretty much anyone can call themselves a coach. Mm-hmm. So if you see the word coach, that does not mean that they're a scam. It does mean that, like, maybe look for certifications, credentials, qualifications, read testimonials. I think if the testimonials or social proof are entirely focused on aesthetics, like, you know, they're not anti-diet. If they have a bunch of client transformation photos, if they're talking about, oh, they lost this many inches or this many pounds, it's like, I don't care about that. How's their relationship with food? How are they getting stronger if that's what they want? How are their, how's their lab work? Like, I'll share that my clients drop their cholesterol, their LDLs by 50 points, because that's dope. And like, that's an actual health marker, you know, like, I don't need a side-by-side picture of a body to show anyone any of that, you know? And it is hard. I want to just like validate that if people are like, oh, this is really frustrating. I don't know who I can trust or if I can trust myself. One of my clients who's been with me kind of on and off in different programs, different capacities for the last 2.5 years or so, she was really vulnerable and told me like, hey, you know, I don't want it to sound like I'm questioning you or questioning intuitive eating, but I was so sure that dieting was what I needed to be doing and that that was the best thing for my health. And I trusted that and believed that so deeply that I don't trust myself anymore to like make the right choice. And now I'm wondering if like intuitive eating is another scam and I can't trust myself, and which is really sad that that has happened, but like, that also makes a lot of sense because we outsourced our power and our trust to all of these external powers that be for so long that people might not even understand what it feels like to trust themselves anymore. And so I think just like really using your discernment, asking a lot of questions. And, you know, I had someone else tell me recently that she got a weird vibe from a trainer that she was working with, but she trusted all of the people who referred her to them, that she didn't listen to her own intuition and ended up getting burned. So like all that to say, if you're getting that twinge of like, I don't know about this, it's probably right.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably right.
Yeah, no. And just to echo what you're saying, I can see why it's confusing. There are so many, you know, messages out there, you know, this is healthy, this is not healthy. And I think it's how do we get rid of the labels of food? Because I think that really messes with people's heads too. It's like, I'm supposed to eat all the quote unquote healthy foods if I want to be healthy. If I eat the quote unquote unhealthy foods, it's not going to make me unhealthy. So yeah.
If you can figure that out, let me know. I really try to we try to rewrite the definition of what that means. And something that I talk about a lot is that I don't know what you mean when you say healthy, because I don't know what that means for you. Like for me, I'm allergic to dairy. So for me, a salad with cheese on it versus a McDonald's burger with no cheese, like the McDonald's burger is healthier for me. I'm literally allergic to the salad. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas like we, for whatever reason, like people would label the salad as healthy and the burger as unhealthy. And it's like, for whom?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what that means for you. And so when I work with my clients through using intuitive eating, it's like, we have to start paying attention to how foods make us feel. Mm-hmm. If you notice that when you eat a big bowl of pasta with meat sauce and whatever, that you sleep like a baby and you wake up feeling refreshed, sounds like that's a really good choice for you. If you eat a big bowl of pasta with meat sauce and you have heartburn and you can't sleep at night and you wake up and you feel like shit, that's probably not a good choice for you. Like, I don't care what the food is. I care how it makes you feel physically in your body. And over time, also like making sure that we're staying on top of our appointments and getting lab work done and getting our health checked and like the things that we can't see and feel. Mm-hmm. Because I was doing really great. And then the last time I got lab work done, it turns out I'm hypoglycemic. So I'm like, oh, that's weird. I wonder what changed. And so it's like, do I need to change my activity level? Do I need to change what I'm eating? Do I need to get more sleep? Do I need to make sure I'm eating food with my coffee in the mornings? You know, like what do I need to do in order to fix that? And just getting curious and understanding that needing to make changes to our lifestyle doesn't mean we've done something wrong. It doesn't mean that's going to be our lifestyle forever. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to figure out, to come back to these terms, healthy and unhealthy. Like, we're just trying to figure out what's healthy for us and knowing that that is different than what it might be for other people.
Yes. And, you know, and we're getting time here, but I do want to just echo that too, because to your point that you said earlier, not following what other people are doing. So if someone else isn't hungry and you're hungry at the moment, like I do hear this from people like, oh, I don't feel comfortable eating around other people if I'm hungry and they're not, or, well, they're not eating this, but I want this, so I'm just going to follow what they're eating. Or, you know, just being able to follow your own path and your own needs and wants. And I think that's also hard for people to do because they're feeling like, I'm going to be judged, or what are people going to think about this? Or, I mean, there's so much stuff going on in people's heads. So, you know, I don't know how to combat that too, but I think, you know, for anyone listening, like, I don't know what needs to be done for people to just give themselves permission to give themselves what they need and want. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I do. That really generally comes down to some deeper questions and things to look at around people pleasing and self-worth and self-advocacy and boundaries. And I think that's honestly the root of a lot of this for a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? Like, why ultimately we're not born caring what our bodies look like. Mm-hmm. That is generally rooted in things like people pleasing, low self-worth, depression, anxiety, trauma. Like, it's never about food and it's never about our body. And so one of the things that I will ask my clients is like, what are you afraid will happen if you order food or if you tell your friends that you're hungry? What are you afraid will happen if your friends are eating and you're not hungry? Like, what are you afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And getting clear on that. And then looking at, okay, cool. So if whatever that fear has happened, how can you be prepared to handle it? And how can you learn to trust yourself to handle those scenarios? ultimately, a lot of people want to feel confident, that they think that changing their bodies will help them feel confident. But confidence is trust. And so if we learn how to trust ourselves to handle those scenarios, to have those conversations, that's where the confidence comes from. It's not going to come from a diet.
Thank you for saying that. Hopefully people are taking that in, because I think that is exactly it. It's about the food, but it's not about the food at all.
The food is a symptom. Like a poor relationship with food is a symptom of something deeper, mm-hmm. which I think is another reason. And again, this could be a whole other separate podcast topic, but that's another mm-hmm. reason that things like outside of medical reasons, things like meal plans, counting macros, following these strict regimen, like gym regimens, like those things are not going to fix the root of it, because all you're doing is making a symptom go away instead of healing what's actually going on.
Exactly. All right, Lara, how do people find you? You're wonderful, amazing. You are the real deal. So, you know, cut through all the BS and not have to worry about if someone's legit or not. You are the coach to work with. So how do people find you?
Yes, I usually am on the gram, though I've really been getting more into Threads, but username's the same. So you can find me over there. It's just my first name dot my last name, Lara, L-A-R-A dot Days, D-A-Y-S. And I've got like a little link in bio where you can get some freebies and send me messages. I really take the social part of social media seriously. So if people DM me, as long as it's not a bot or spam, like I always respond.
I can attest to that, because that's how we connected. So it works. She yes. does respond. So awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so very much. Great information. And everybody, that all her information will be in the show notes. So thank you again so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Christina.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.